Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and earned philosophy and theology degrees from Purdue University. For 40 years, he held various sales positions in the automotive supply industry. Today, he's the chairman and president of Living Hope International, whose mission is to provide love, shelter, and education to orphaned children in Zambia. His name, Lee Davis, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Lee Davis, the chairman and president of Living Hope International. Lee, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thanks. It's nice to be here, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Okay. I grew up in northeastern Indiana, around Fort Wayne, Indiana. My mom and dad were, you know, products of the Depression. My mom was a loving caregiver and a peacemaker because I'm the third son of eight children, raised Catholic. And she was always having to make peace between us kids' squabbles and fighting. And, of course, also peacemaking between dad and ourselves. My dad was a tool and die maker. His great love was probably hunting and fishing. And he passed that along to my three brothers and I. So one of the great memories I have as a child is dad waking us up at 4:30 in the morning on Saturdays to get ready to go rabbit hunting. And then we'd be back shortly after noon and clean the game. And so as a kid, we ate a lot of rabbit, squirrel, and wild game. And I think that comes from the time when my dad was a young boy in the Depression. That's probably the only meat they had to eat. He was a tremendous teacher, and he gave all of his kids a sense of accomplishment and to only accept the best from ourselves, never second rate.
And what's the biggest thing you learned from your mom?
Well, my mom had a great heart, like I said, raising eight children. And so I think the thing that I learned from her most of all was caring for other people, because she was always out there in the church doing work and through the schools. So she cared for other people. That's what she taught me, to have a heart for people.
You drove from Fort Wayne down to East Lafayette, Purdue University. You start out as a mechanical engineering major. Then you leave. You're in Nam in 69 and 70. And then you come back to Purdue, and you get a philosophy and a theology degree. Huge change from mechanical engineering. What happened?
Well, when I went to Vietnam, I guess the best thing to say is I lost my faith, experiencing the war and the various things that happened. So when I came back, I didn't know what I believed. And having been raised a Catholic and gone to church all my life, I started to just investigate, and so it led me into taking courses in philosophy, and then I got excited about that and took more and more courses in theology, and I joked to people and say I ended up with a degree in all theology, so whether it was sociology, psychology, or anthropology, I took all the courses and ended up with a BA in humanities and philosophy and theology.
You spent 40-plus years in sales. How did you ever get from theology, philosophy, into sales?
Well, I started out in engineering, and I already had a position with a company in the engineering area. So as I kind of graduated from school, it was a natural kind of thing in philosophy and theology and psychology and those things to really deal with people and to sense people more than just to draw lines on a piece of paper and be a mechanical engineer. So my natural tendency was to work with people. So from engineering, I went into sales engineering. And from sales engineering, I went into sales and marketing, where I spent the majority of my career.
You spent a lot of it with Navistar, which is the builder of the big trucks, etc., and also Tremec, High Performance Manual Transmissions, and you had both sales and then VP of Sales and Marketing, where you managed and led a lot of salespeople. What's the difference between a great salesman and a great sales manager?
Well, in a case of a sales manager, you have to work through people. You have to accomplish your goals through other people. So motivation of people is extremely important. And teaching and helping those people to learn what you've learned through the years. So I think that's the big difference, is being a teacher rather than a doer.
What do all great salesmen, Lee, have in common?
I think that salesmen have to be resilient. I used to tell my sales guys, you know, you're going to go out there and you're going to get no's. And I kind of told them, I said, picture yourself as a knight in shining armor. And you go out at the day, and by the night you come back, you got a lot of dents and bruises in your armor. And you've got to be able to take that armor off at night, pound it out, polish it back up, and put it back on the next day, and go back out again, knowing that you're going to get a lot of no's. But for every no you get, you're getting closer to that one yes that's going to be the success that's going to drive you.
Recently, I was with some people, and we were talking about the greatest salesman of all time. And Walt Disney was thrown out, Lee Iacocca, Steve Jobs, the Donald, Gates. And then one person said, oh, no. Far and away, the greatest salesperson of all time was the Jewish carpenter from Nazareth. What did he teach us about sales?
Well, he taught us that we needed to love the other people. That was the key thing. To put yourself in their shoes, not to be judgmental, and to love on them.
If there's a young person today thinking about going into sales, talk to them about a career in sales today.
Well, we talk about customer service all the time in sales, and what is real customer service? It's caring about that guy that you're trying to sell something to, and put yourself in his shoes and understand what it is he wants, and then answer those questions for him. Not trying to sell him what necessarily you think is the best mousetrap, but what he wants. And once you understand what his drivers are, then you can design your products around that, whether it be a final product or it be a service.
We're talking to Lee Davis. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with Lee Davis. And Lee, by your own admission, you had no relationship with God for 40 years. You got this degree in philosophy, theology, raised Catholic, no relationship. How did you come to God?
Well, my life was going really well, I thought, and I was preparing for retirement, and a tragedy happened to me, and that tragedy was basically suffering through a divorce after 29 years of marriage. And so there was a traumatic experience, and I had to decide where was my life going from there. And I read a book. And I remember the author's name, but I don't remember the name of the book, but it was by Rick Joyner. And in that book, he said, when tragedy happens, you have two choices to make. You can either get bitter or you can get better. And so I decided that I wanted to be better. And my son came to me and said, hey, Dad, I got a book for you to read. I think it'd be helpful for you in this time of your life. And so he gave me The Purpose-Driven Life by Rick Warren. And that was the start of a walk for the next 2 years in reading that book, and then remembering that a long time ago I made a promise to God that I was going to read the Bible from cover to cover, which I never did. So I decided that I'd pick up the Bible and just do that. So I started to read the Bible, and it took me about a year and a half to read the cover to cover, but I also read all the notes and everything else because I'm a historian buff and all of that. So, and during that time, I came to the Lord.
God also brought you Trina. And in 2001, she helped start Living Hope International to help the people of Zambia in Africa. Bob Chirac of Oak Point Church was also instrumental in helping form it. Talk to us about Living Hope International.
Trina went the first time to Zambia in 2001, and she's gone every year since. sometimes a couple of times a year. And about 2003, after seeing the need of the children there, she got the idea of starting an orphanage. And so Oak Point, Bob Chirac, and Campus Crusade for Christ Zambia came together to pull this orphanage together that Trina was involved with from the very beginning. It wasn't until 2006, we got married in 2006 in May, and 2 weeks later, I was going to Africa on my first honeymoon with 50 other people. And I didn't know whether I'd like it, and she didn't know whether I would like it. But during that 2 weeks that I was there, I just saw the need was huge. And I thought, well, there's more that we can do. So Trina and I, when we got back, we got together with some other people from Oak Point who had gone to Zambia. We started meeting every Sunday and praying about what God wanted us to do with this orphanage and where we should take it. Because it really wasn't Oak Point's mission to run an orphanage. And it wasn't Campus Crusade. I mean, they're basically a college campus type of an organization that Bill Bright founded here in the States, but they're global now. It wasn't their mission to run an orphanage either. So we thought that if we needed to talk about amongst ourselves what we should do, and from those conversations, a 501c3 was formed, named Living Hope International. We changed the name from its original name and took responsibility gradually from Oak Point, because Oak Point was basically funding all the cost of the orphanage. So we started to raise support by having the children sponsored. And then after the children were sponsored, well-wishers came on board that donated more and more money. And we started to grow the orphanage to larger than what it was. It was originally 13 children when I became involved with Trina. And now we have 30 children in two homes, a girls' home and a boys' home. And we've also acquired 40 acres of land south of this city, Ndola, Zambia, where we're developing now a campus that will eventually house 100 children, and I have a school for up to 300 children. So we'll take in children from the surrounding area. And it's a complete city on a hill. It's got a church and a medical clinic, first through 12 grades of school. It's got a vocational education wing, because as you probably know, Africa has been decimated by AIDS, and so there's a lot of children growing up without parents and no skills being passed on. So by having a vocational education wing, we can start to educate some adults that are already there and give them skills and trades so they can become productive citizens of their country. And of course, we've got to have a soccer field, because soccer is a number one sport over there. And we, and in that 40 acres, that campus takes up about 15 acres. So 25 acres is designated for agriculture, and we're going to grow coffee and then export the coffee back here to the United States to market it to the churches here in southeastern Michigan as a support to raise and send the money back to Africa.
Lee, Zambia is the size of Texas, 14 million people, a million orphans because of AIDS. The median daily income is a dollar a day. Unemployment rate in Zambia, 85%. Talk to us about a Zambian's typical day.
Well, typically in the rural area, that's agriculture is a mainstay, and most of the people raise corn. But it's the women and the children who stay at home and tend to the fields. And the husband typically will walk to town or get on the highway and hitchhike to town, and then stand in a big area hoping to get hired for the day. And there may be banana plantations or other coffee plantations or things like that that would hire them. And the truck pulls in, and a foreman will say, okay, you get on the truck, and they hope to get picked, but if they don't get picked, they go home without work for that day. And they spend a lot of time just commuting back and forth from the city to where they live in the country, all to make a dollar a day.
You've been the president of Living Hope International since January of 2008. What does that involve?
Well, initially, I was still working for Tremec at the time, and so I was balancing time between, you know, trying to move LHI forward and grow it while I was still employed. And finally, I had to ask myself, when is enough enough, and it's time to give up the employment and to start full-time for LHI. So I decided at the end of last year that it was enough, and I retired so that I could devote full-time. And it, there's just a tremendous amount that needs to be done. Fundraising is a big one, because a lot of the initial input will come from the United States. But one of the things we've been doing also is working with the local Zambian industry, and there is local Zambian industry, to get them to partner with us. So I've spent time working and talking with Lafarge, a global cement company. I mean, that was a God story in itself. A young man that went to our church heard me talk about what we wanted to do, and he said, well, I think I know somebody from Lafarge here in Detroit. So he got in touch with a cohort that was on Habitat for Humanities. And this gentleman said, oh yeah, I know the name of the CEO. So he got me an email address for the CEO of Lafarge in Southeast Africa. And I just sent the guy an email and told him what we wanted to do. And he responded back and said, we'd like to talk further. So that summer when we visited, we went down to their headquarters and met with them, had a one-hour meeting. And this company decided they would partner with us and provide us all the cement needs that we needed to build this complete campus. And if that wasn't enough, in the same meeting they said, well, we see you have a medical operation that comes every summer. We said, yes, Oak Point always has a medical team that goes there. He said, well, we have a fully equipped medical truck and doctors, and we'd like to offer that when your team comes so we can work alongside of you up in Ndola. We said, fantastic. And then the guy said, we also see you have a library planned for your school. We said, yeah, of course. And he said, well, Lafarge has a global initiative to help children read around the world. So when you get ready to equip that library, we'll do it for you. And so from a one-hour meeting, this was a huge breakthrough. So we realized that not all of the money, not all of the efforts have to come from the United States, that there is abilities inside Zambia to help their own people. So we're concentrated on that area also.
We're talking to Lee Davis, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasul, and we're with Lee Davis, the chairman and president of Living Hope International. Lee, in the last segment, we mentioned that for 40 years, you had no relationship with God. And now, Zambia, these orphans of Zambia, have captured your heart. Is God involved, and do you have a relationship with God today?
Yes, I came to Christ in 2005, after about 2 years, like I said, of reading the Bible and praying and going to Oak Point Church. My son had recommended that I should try that church, and it was a solid church. And you know Bob Shyrock, so you know what kind of man he is. And so I just got more and more involved, and then I met Trina, and Trina invited me to share her vision on this orphanage in Zambia. So God just sort of worked in our lives, and originally I wasn't the president of Living Hope. It was another gentleman, but this guy was young, and he was in the child-rearing years, and so he couldn't devote enough time, so the baton passed to me. And initially, when I started, I was still trying to do things in my own strength and my own efforts. And as time passed, I wasn't being very successful. I kept running into roadblocks and running into roadblocks. And the more I prayed about it, the more I started to realize that, you know, that I'm not the one who's really necessarily doing the work. You know, it's God can accomplish it all for himself, but he allows us to participate. So I started to take a back seat and let God lead me more. And one of the things, we were trying to buy land in Zambia to put this complex on that we had envisioned, and it wasn't working. And we had brought a director, a Zambian director on board who had formerly worked for Campus and had run the Jesus Film Project in the bush. And he knew the chief, the local tribal chief, and he said, let's ask the tribal chief if he can help us to acquire land. I said, well, you know, on my own strength, it hasn't worked. Let's do it. So Davy Shapoya is the gentleman's name in Africa. He set up this meeting with the tribal chief, and we went to this meeting, and I thought, okay, They instructed me on how I had to greet the chief. I had to be on my knees. I had to clap rhythmically until I was recognized. I had to stay lower than the chief. And so I was, okay, God, if this is what you want me to do, then I'll do it. So the chief walks in front of me, and I see his feet, and I'm clapping like I'm supposed to, and all of a sudden, in perfect English, the chief says to me, oh, this is not your culture, this is not your language. Come up, stand up and join me. And he asked me to join him and sit on the same couch at the same height he was, which wasn't supposed to be done. Come to find out, this new chief, he'd only been chief for about 6 months, his older brother had died, had gone to seminary in Toronto, Canada, and had lived in Canada for several years, and so he spoke English fluently. So he heard what we wanted to do, and he said, you know, what I want to do is to help my people by bringing organizations like Living Hope that are going to provide jobs and improve the life of my tribes people. That's what I want. So yes, I'll work with you to help you find land. So he sent his ambassador out to with us for 3 days to find a parcel of land that was suitable, and that's where it all began, because we stepped aside and let God take the lead.
If you want to learn more, www.livinghopeinternational.org. Lee Davis, what have the 30 kids in the orphanage taught you?
Well, when we started to gather the children, we realized the conditions that they live in. And, I mean, we took one child in just this year to finish the 30 that we thought we can actually handle in the houses. And these children are coming from nothing. They don't even know what kind of a meal, if they'll eat it all that day. And so they've taught me to not so much rely on my own strength, but to rely more on God, because their faith is so much greater than ours is.
You were in Zambia for the whole month of June. What did you see, Lee, and what did you learn?
Well, we took over a construction team that was working on our land, and one of the things that we did from the very beginning was to understand that if we were going to be successful, it couldn't be the Americans building this and then handing the keys off to the Zambians. We had to partner with the Zambians so they would work alongside us to build it in conjunction with us. So therefore, they're engaged, they're employed, and they're empowered. And we're creating jobs for them, and they're taking ownership of this property as we develop it. So seeing these people, and so thankful for a job, and you know, we're paying them a lot more than the daily wage in Zambia, and they're very thankful for it. But when we leave, we don't have to worry about the place being destroyed, because they have ownership in it and they take care of it. So I saw a situation where Americans went over there to sacrifice and to build, but relationships were formed between the Zambians and the Americans, to where that the team went back this year, and many of the team members were the same people that went the previous year, and they just have created a bond and a loving relationship with the locals that are living right around our land as they work on this project. The same thing we did, at the same time, we took a team over there that wanted to do a theater production, performing arts camp for our children. They taught them dance and musicals, and we did an outreach to the community. At the end of our trip, we contacted the international school that is primarily run and supported by the Hindus, a large Indian contingency in Zambia, been there for over 100 years. But they have a wonderful school accredited with Cambridge University in England. They have a three-story library, an in-ground swimming pool, a soccer field, grass soccer field. I mean, it is a fabulous school. They also have an auditorium that will seat about 400 people. So we contacted them and asked them if they would allow us to do this performance as an offering to the community. And they received us with open arms. So by the time we were done and we did this performance at the school, there was a afterglow afterwards with food and beverages served. I never got out of the auditorium. I was swamped by people from all nationalities, all religious persuasion, wanting to help LHI. And how could they get involved? Hindu women wearing saris, coming up and saying, we like what you're doing. How can we help the orphanage? How can we help the children? We deal with a hardware store that we buy a lot of our hardware equipment for, run by a couple by the name of Mr. and Mrs. Desai. They're Indians. Born in Zambia, lived in Zambia all their life, never been to India to speak of. And afterwards, they were so impressed, they came to the production. We sent them an invitation. They came. They gave us a large donation. The husband says, I want to run a golf outing here in Ndola. We have a golf course, and I want to put on a golf tournament to raise money for Living Hope. So, you know, as we start to reach out to the community responds, and we're connecting with the community in Zambia. So it becomes, this is a project for the Zambians, not for Americans.
Every time you go over, people that know you say, you come back a changed man. How is that?
Well, my son said it best to me the very first time I went, as I was getting ready to go with Trina in that year of 2006, and I had never really gone overseas to Africa on a mission trip. As you know from my job experience, I had global responsibility, and I traveled all over the world for 30 years, but I'd never been to Africa, and I'd never been on a mission trip like this. And my son had been with Campus Crusade and on stint for a year, and he told me, he says, Dad, God will do more to you than through you. And I didn't realize what he meant at the time. But after that first trip, I realized that when I came back, I didn't have that much of an impact on the Zambians in that first year, but the country had a great impact upon me. So God was moving on me. And every year I go back, I see these kids growing. I mean, I've been involved now for almost 7 years. And when we took these kids in, you know, they were 7 years of age, and now they're 14. And some of them, we have the oldest boy is 20 and now in trade school. And these kids have grown. They've become my children. I tell them because of the age difference that I'm their grandfather. But they're just loving children, and they are going to be the future of Zambia.
We're talking to Lee Davis, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Lee Davis, Chairman President of Living Hope International, who has an orphanage for 30 orphans in Zambia, an African country with 14 million people. 1 million of its children are orphans because of HIV/AIDS. A few weeks ago, I had a leader from World Orphans on the show. And here were some facts. The sobering truth. In the past hour, 1,625 children were forced to live on the streets by the death or abuse of an adult. 1,667 children in the last hour under the age of 5 died from malnutrition and other preventable diseases. That's one every 2.2 seconds. In the last hour, 115 children have become prostitutes. In the last hour, 66 children under 15 were infected with HIV. In the last hour, 257 children were orphaned because of HIV. There are 150 million orphans in the world, by definition, having lost one or both parents. Lee, talk to us about these orphans.
The thing that I see when I visit the bush and the compounds in Zambia is I see these children rearing their younger brothers and sisters. It's not uncommon to see a 10-year-old with a 5- or 6-year-old strapped on their back caring for that child because their parents have died. And they scrimp and try to find food, and maybe it's a piece of sugar cane that they'll chew on. That'll be the only nourishment they have for that day. So these kids are left behind with no parents, and they're helping to raise their younger brothers and sisters. It is they're heroes. And so when we see this, and you know, it's kind of sad because you can't take them all in. I mean, we've only got 30, and like you said, there's over 1 million orphans in Zambia alone. But they inspire us because they have hope. And that's where the term living hope comes from.
Conversely, when you come back to the States, you see young people with everything. Unbelievable. Material things, etc. What message do you give to the young people of America?
Well, I would say that I'd want to tell them not to waste 40 years of their life like I did, and not to count their success as solely their bank account or their materialistic possessions, but also to the content of their heart, and to get involved. And it doesn't have to be in Africa. It can be right here in Detroit. It can be anywhere. But they need to put value where the real substance and the real value is, and that's in caring and loving others.
You're in great shape. You retired officially in December of 2012. You're 65. Lee, you've earned the great life. Why not fish, golf, travel, enjoy life?
Well, initially, before the divorce happened that we talked about, I was planning for that retirement to leisure. But then when I started to examine it closer, I realized that, you know, that's a pretty shallow existence. I mean, how many days a week can you play golf before you get tendonitis and you can't play? Or if that's all there is. So I was reading a book, and it was, I think it was Bob Buford was the author, and it was called From Success to Significance, or The Second Half is another one that he's written. And it just spoke to me about, well, there's so much more I can do with my life to get involved and not just to focus on number one. Because when you really stop and think about it, we're pretty shallow. The self is too small of a vessel to maintain continuous interest.
The poverty is overwhelming. You're helping 30 orphans. You hope to help someday 300 orphans. We talked about that there's 150 million orphans today in the world. So you are not even a drop in the bucket. Don't you get dejected?
No, I know I can't have a huge impact, but I can save some. And it's not really me that's doing the work. It's God. I think of what is in the book of James, and it says that the religion that our Father considers righteous is care for widows and orphans in their distress. So I'm doing what I can, and hopefully other people will get involved with us and we'll be able to grow this and make a difference in the lives of 100, 200, 300 children that can become leaders for Zambia tomorrow and have an impact, Christian leaders for Zambia tomorrow that can have an impact upon their country.
We've been blessed to have Peter Pretorius as a guest a few times, the founder of JAM, Joint Aid Management, and they're feeding 1 million children a day in Africa. And he made this statement, and I quote, "I've learned much more from the poor than I ever did from the rich." Why?
Well, I would say that the poor teach you humility. And I remember a saying that says humility is not thinking less of yourself, but it's thinking of yourself less. So the poor make us aware of our mortality, make us aware of our need for each other. And where the rich don't need anybody, they've got all they need to care for themselves.
Another guest in the past, Father John Foley, the founder and CEO of Cristo Rey High Schools, phenomenal 24 high schools in the inner city, phenomenal program. And he spent 30 years in Peru, and he made the statement, I quote, "Despair is a first world country phenomenon." He said, "Jack, there is no despair in the third world countries, only in the rich countries." Why is that?
When I look at the people that I come in contact with in Zambia, their faith is so much stronger than ours. I think that we have been seduced by the material world that we live in and the comforts that we have, and we take a lot of things for granted. The poor take nothing for granted, and they know that every day is going to be a struggle, but there is no despair. Like he said, they have hope. And they continue to hope that their life will be better. They just need resources.
We all know Bill Gates from Microsoft, you know, at different times the wealthiest man in the world, marries a sales lady for him, Melinda, Catholic lady from Dallas, couple of daughters, and they start the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which does a lot of work in Africa. Tell us about the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and what they're doing in Africa.
Well, one of the things that they're trying to do is to stamp out diseases that are prevalent in third world countries, malaria being one of the number one. Right now, I just saw that they are trying to bring tuberculosis to an end, and there's like 9 countries where tuberculosis still exists, most of them in Africa. But malaria, as most people, you know, are cognizant of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, and it's devastating because it wipes out families. But actually, malaria is the number one killer of people in Africa. And these children grow up in the bush, and they contract malaria very young. And if they don't get medications or whatever, you can have high fevers and brain damage and things like that. So many of these children, had malaria very young in life, and so their growth is stunted. Their mental capacities are stunted. So the work that the Gates Foundation is doing is tremendous, tremendous.
As our times wind down tonight, would you lead us in a closing prayer, Lee Davis?
I would be honored. Heavenly Father, we come before you this evening, and we just lift up the children, orphans in the world, and the orphans in Zambia. And we just ask you to pour your grace and your love out upon those children and to help more and more people who have the means to love and care for these children and to get involved. We just ask you to touch their hearts with the Holy Spirit just well up inside of them, and have them get involved, regardless of what age they are, whether they're young, middle-aged, or in retirement like I am. God, just move through your people and stir their hearts for love for these orphan children around the world. And we pray this all in the mighty name of Jesus.
Jesus said, "What you do unto the least of the little ones, you do unto me." Lee Davis, you're doing great for him. Keep up the great work, you and your team.
Thank you very much, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.